So good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining my session on the FMA, a deep dive. So I'd like to talk a bit about what happens under the hood, so to speak, with regards to some of the services and components involved. I named it the 2016 edition because any architectural application, the FMA is under constant development as well. And well, who knows, maybe I can do sort of the same session maybe in some other form or shape within a year, 2 years from now when things are a bit different again. So gives me something to work with. Anyway, I'm not going to talk about any of the features and functionalities within Xenoborg Zen Desktop. I'd like to take a more architectural approach, so to speak. So talk a bit more about the services, how they are made highly available within the FMA. Things like service groups, service interfaces, but also some history involved with regards to how we got from IMA to FMA, where we are today with 7.8. And also, I'd like to thank both Helga, and don't know if Tim is here as well, for inviting me before I begin to speak over here. I had a great time so far, and looking forward to the rest of the event as well, of course. So, having said that, a quick look at the agenda for this session. I'll start out with a couple of minutes on me, so you guys know who I am, what I like to spend my time on. Then, as mentioned, from IMA to FMA and some of the steps involved, sort of an evolution path, you could say. Okay. And then an overview from the FMA services, components involved, a bit more high level still. But then we'll skip over to a more in-depth look, and I'll talk about what service groups are, server interfaces, things like that. And then we'll conclude with a more detailed look at both the configuration and the broker service, because they play, as you'll see shortly, a more prominent role than most of the other services within the FMA. So about me, my name is Bas, or Sebastian, actually in full. I'm 37, I'm Dutch. I live in a place called IJmuiden, which is near the ocean. Senior management consultant with a company called Dtron, the Dtron ICT group in the Netherlands, Dutch as well, of course. In IT for over 16 years now, almost 17. And if you look at the first 12 to 13 years of my career, then most of my experience comes from Microsoft-related projects, and I started focusing on the Citrix portfolio, more specific, in late 2012, early 2013, and basically I've been doing ever since. Really enjoy that. So I've presented before, and I started presenting in 2012, about a year ago from now, so still fairly new to this, at events like E2E, which you might have heard of, the Kurs, of course, the Dutch Citrix user group, to be a bit more specific, which was my first, one of my first bigger presentations last year in February. I have my own space over at basvankam.com, and I'm currently working on a book, so author of Inside Citrix, the Flex Cost Management Architecture, which hopefully, if everything goes according to plan, which it normally doesn't, but it will be finished within 4 to 6 weeks from now. So hopefully that will be okay. I'm a Citrix technology professional as of 2016, so this year I'm part of the 2016 class, as Citrix likes to call it, so proud to be a member of that group as well, and I'm looking forward to the first meetings over at Synergy next month. It's going to be interesting, to say the least. I'm also a Nutanix technology champion, and basically have been ever since they started the program 2.5 years ago. So, last but not least, enjoy my kids very much. Love to go out for a run 4 or 5 times a week or something like that. Staying fit in general, think it's important. And if I can combine the two, so go out with a run or go out for a run with my kids, then, which unfortunately doesn't happen too much, but then I'm most happy, basically. So, first, I'd like to spend 1 or 2 minutes on, is this all still relevant? And of course, I'll explain what I mean by this, because during the last year and a half or so, I've had multiple conversations with people from the field, customers, especially customers, but also some colleagues and ex-colleagues, talking about, is it still relevant to know about the ins and outs with regards to products like Xenobank Zen Desktop, to know about the components, services, how they interact, and so on and so forth. Because most say, we're moving to the cloud, or everything's moving up to the cloud. And if you look like services or technologies like CWC, which stands for Citrix Workspace Cloud, as you might know. If you look at services like that, then we don't really need to worry about those types of things anymore. And that's when I usually say, No, or that's only partly true, because if you look at products like CWC, for example, then of course it makes life a lot easier with regards to our infrastructural components. If you look at your delivery controller, for example, your database, or even your storefront, for example, because you have a few options there. But if you look at your VDAs or your virtual delivery agents on your worker machines from a Xena perspective, or VMs from a or desktop VMs from a VDI perspective, I was about to say, then you would still be the one taking care of those. So they would live still on premises or in another cloud service of choice, for example. But even then, you would be the one taking care of those. And I know that services like lifecycle management services, for example, can really help with that, make things easier a bit. But in the end, it will only take you so far, and you'll still end up managing and maintaining those machines. And also with CWC, for example, you would still use management consoles like Studio and Director, for example, for ongoing maintenance, configuring, things like that. So there will always be a lot of FMA, so to speak, involved still, no matter which route you take. And also, if you look at other cloud services, like infrastructure as a service, for example, which is also a popular approach nowadays, well, you would basically still need to take care of the same things that you would do now on your on-premises data center, for example, with a couple of exceptions, of course, but you would still need to come up with some sort of a technical design. You would still need to take care of installation, configuration, ongoing maintenance, troubleshooting, and so on. If you work for a company that could do with desktop as a service, for example, or software as a service, or a combination of the two, then I say, well, okay, then you don't have to worry about those kind of things anymore, because your service provider will take care of those for you. But I think going forward as well, that although a lot of companies successfully leverage those kinds of technologies already, for most companies going forward as well, as mentioned, I think they will still be too limited or restricted in what they can do with the environment, with their virtual desktops themselves. So putting it all together, I say yes, it is still relevant to know about, well, these types of things that I'm going to talk about today, and in general, of course. And, well, not everything I'm going to discuss today will make you a better or smarter Citrix administrator per se, because, and I don't think that's necessary, because as a technician, it's also fun to know and read and listen to these types of things and know about these types of things. So that's also sort of the idea behind the presentation today. From a sort of evolution perspective, it didn't start in 2009 with regards to the FMA, or it did start from a Citrix perspective. They started working on the architecture, but in 2009, we still had Xen Desktop 4, which was fully IMA-based. And it was in 2010 that Citrix released Xen Desktop 5, which was fully FMA-based. And of course, they were working in the background to also include workloads like RDSH-type workloads, XenApp, which they released as part of Xen Desktop 7, as you might recall, in 2013. And that was also the year that Citrix decided to drop XenApp as a separate product. And I think if you think back a couple of years, we can all remember what happened shortly after that. Most customers weren't too happy about that decision. So for one, they loved XenApp. So they were also in doubt for, well, what's happening next with regards to future updates, support, and things like that. But also, there was a very big feature gap between Xen Desktop 7 at that time, and the options that we had with regards to the features and functionalities within 6.5. And even today, there are some differences, of course. So again, a lot of reasons for customers to be unhappy about that decision, and also no need to make the transition from 6.5 to 7, at least not at that time. Of course, Citrix listened, as they always do. And in 2014, they re-released XenApp as part of Xen Desktop and XenApp 7.5. But I think you all know that was more marketing than anything else, because you would still install the same bits and bytes, and depending on the license you would purchase and upload and so on, certain functionality would become available, so either RDSH, VDI, or both in some cases, of course. But at least, well, XenApp was back, and we love XenApp. I think we all know that story, so at least some customers were more happy than they were before. I think that's the best way to describe it. Then 2016, where we are now, I think they're getting very close. They did a good job. It took some time, but they're getting there. And also, with regards to certain functionalities and features, we now have a couple of things that we didn't have before, like zones. They're not the same as within 6.5 still. It's still a phased approach, so who knows what's coming next. But we now have zones for Xen Desktop, which we hadn't before. So I think that's the positive side. And also technologies like app disks, for example, which is also tightly integrated within the FMA as well. It still needs some work, according to many or most. But at least it's there now. We didn't have it before. And of course, going forward, I'm sure we'll see 7.9, 8.0, or whatever's next. And of course, we also have, as mentioned, CWC, which also heavily depends on the FMA as well. And in fact, if new features or functionalities are introduced within Xenopore Xen Desktop, they will first be introduced within CWC, heavily tested, and so on and so forth, before they will be built into the on-premises products. So a bit more evolution, as mentioned, when XenApp became part of Xen Desktop or became part of the FMA, still a big feature gap back then, but it was mainly because the FMA was built with VDI in mind to start with. And they started adding in the RDSH technology over time, which, if you look at it today, again, they did a pretty good job up till now. Of course, it took them some time, a couple of years, 2.5, 3 years to get where they are today. So you could argue that they should have waited a year, perhaps 2 years longer, before adding in XenApp, so that the feature gap would be less, and the customers wouldn't be or would be less upset as well. But I guess that's just the way it is, and water under the bridge, and let's see what comes next. So the FMA is a .NET-based architecture, and it is built upon the Windows Communication Foundation, which is a framework specifically used to design, build, or code service-oriented applications. And Xen Desktop is, of course, as we'll see in a couple of slides' time, the perfect example of a service-oriented application. Multiple reasons why Citrix chose for this approach. I don't know them all, but of course it's nice to have both of your core flagship products under one architecture, and also the ability to be able to manage them from one management console, for example. But also the services approach made it much more modular, so when they need to add in or change certain features or functionalities, it has become a lot easier. So I think going forward, with the new support releases they announced, every 3 to 6 months, we will probably see new releases coming up, because it's easier for them at this or like this. If you put a visual to that, then you have the .NET technology, which is also used to code and to build the Windows Communication Foundation itself, which is then used together with Visual Studio, for example, to build a service-oriented application, which Xen Desktop is, of course. An overview with regards to the 9 main components that make up the FMA, according to Citrix. I think you guys all know these, but just to go over them, we have, of course, Receiver, a small but very important piece of the puzzle. Of course, Storefront and our delivery controllers or in the middle, because you could say that your delivery controller, or multiple, of course, are the heart of your FMA, and we'll see why shortly. Of course, we have Studio and Director for ongoing maintenance, configuration, and so forth, and very important as well, the central site database. And we have multiple databases, but I'll get to that in a minute. Of course, a license server, and then we have the hypervisor, which is known as the host connection within Studio, could be a cloud-based service as well, of course. It's part of the main components, I just say it's optional, because you could just as easily run Xenopore Xen Desktop on physical machines as well, without a hypervisor involved. So, but okay, of course we have the VDAs, and we have two. We now have server and desktop, and before we only had a desktop VDA, and so the server is new, or relatively new, because it has been here for 3 years now. So the delivery controller is a special component. It's sort of the heart of your FMA, as mentioned. And this is why. These are the 11 main FMA services that, basically make up the FMA, the Flex Cost Management Architecture, as a whole, and help in the communication between the components and so on and so forth. And I'd like to go over them briefly and then spend some extra time on the configuration and the broker service as we progress. So on the top left, you see the host service, which is responsible for communicating all communications to the underlying hypervisor or your host connection. Then below that is MCS, which stands for Machine Creation Services, used for auto provision of, well, dozens, multiple of virtual machines based on a master VM or template VM, or whatever you like to call it, using a technology called the differencing disks, sort of like link clones used by VMware, for example. Below that is the delegated administration service. It's a sort of an important one because it takes care of all the administrative accounts within your site. And it also means that as soon as an administrator wants to change something, wants to change a configuration within your site, its account will sort of communicate with the delegated administration service to see if it has the proper permissions and rights to do so. So if this service is down, then no site changes basically will be possible. The storefront service. This one is not used to manage your storefront deployment within Studio, which is also a possibility, of course. But this one is used and to add in your storefront deployment under the configuration node in Studio. And what this allows you to do is that when you publish out hosted shared desktops to your users, you will be able to automatically configure your installed receiver as part of that hosted shared desktop to use your storefront deployment that has been added within Studio. That's what this service is for. Then the analytics service takes care of collecting analytical data and is used together with the Citrix Experience Improvement Program, if I'm not mistaken. Sends up data up to Citrix for analytical purposes so that they know what's going on at the customer sites. Used for the better good, of course, and it's voluntarily, so it's not enabled by default. The AD Identity Manager takes care of giving your physical and virtual machines their own identity within Active Directory. The Monitor Service takes care of, well, monitoring your entire site and make sure that alerts and notifications pop up within a Director, for example, but also Studio. Environment stands for Environment Test Service, and it takes care of all the environment tests that you can run, or site tests that you can run from Studio, for example. You have tests that you can run on your delivery groups, on your catalogs, but also site-wide tests, and then depending on how large your site is with regards to policies, users, machines, will take a couple of minutes. Configuration logging service takes care of logging all of the administrative changes within a site, which gets stored in a database. And the monitor service also has its own database. Or you could choose to make both the monitoring data and the configuration logging data part of the central site database as well. But it's a recommended best practice to configure separate databases for both. And again, a configuration and service, or the configuration and the broker service will be discussed in more detail. Now, all of these services need to communicate with the underlying central site database. And all these services live completely separate, independent from each other. They also have a separate so-called database string into the database. And this ensures that if one of these services goes down or goes offline, that it won't affect any of the other services within the FMA. So that's one thing to know. Now, of course, we have the desktop virtual delivery agent, so your desktop, your VDI-based VMs, which has a couple of interesting and important services as well. So we have the desktop service and the ICA service. The ICA service basically represents the ICA HDX protocol stack on your VM. And all of the communication between your delivery controllers and your VDAs will be handled by the desktop service. And that also goes for the ICA service. If it needs to communicate with your delivery controllers, then it will go through the desktop service. And the same goes for all of the plugins available within your VDA. Now on top, we have Studio and PowerShell, both ongoing maintenance, troubleshooting, monitoring, and so on. They both heavily rely on the PowerShell SDK. And in fact, almost everything you do from Studio and Director, so if you hit save or whatever, change a configuration, then it's basically a predefined PowerShell script being run in the background. And the same that goes for both Studio and Director. But if you would use PowerShell exclusively, so without a graphical user interface involved, then you would be able to do a lot more than available from both graphical user interfaces using either Studio or Director, for example. So it's a very powerful tool if you know what you're doing. Also worth noting is that if you want to use older VDAs within a newer deployment, that's possible, but you need to enable WinRAM 2.0 on those VDAs. Otherwise, they won't be able to communicate with both Studio and Director. And then we have the hypervisor communication library, which is basically a set of APIs, application program interfaces, used by these three services to communicate with the underlying hypervisor or host connection. And then, of course, as of Xen Desktop 7, we now also have a server VDA, which is very close to what we had with regards to XenOps 6.5 and the services in there. But they recoded it to be able to communicate with the delivery controllers as part of the FMA, which basically means they, in simple terms, they added in the Citrix desktop service for communication purposes between the VDI and the delivery controllers. Now, a bit more evolution with regards to the services. It started out, again, in 2010 with six services. From there, it grew to 10, up to 11 today. And basically, new services have been added over the years, with new additions coming out, with one exception, which is the machine identity service, which was made part of the machine creation service as part of the 2013 release. Now, management, I already mentioned both Citrix, Studio and Director, heavily relying on PowerShell. This includes version 3-based PowerShell snap-ins and also the modules. These will be automatically loaded, you could say, because they're part of the delivery controller installation. So you don't have to load any separate Citrix or Xen desktop-related snap-ins and or modules. Yeah, and now for a more in-depth look, first you need to know that an FMA service is also referenced to as a server instance. Small difference or small name change, but they mean exactly the same thing. Now, when a delivery controller boots, all of those 11 services as part of your delivery controller need to register themselves with something called a service group. And a service group will host or give room to registered services of the same type. And with this, I mean that if you, for example, have four delivery controllers as part of your site, you will also have, for example, four broker services, and those will all register themselves with the same service group. So you basically will have a service group per server instance, which means 11 main services, 11 main service groups or service groups. And how this works in more detail, we'll see on the next slide. Now, each service also has one or multiple service interfaces. And a service interface is basically nothing more than a way for a service to be able to communicate with other services within the FMA or with an application outside of the FMA, for example. There are, I believe, 16 in total, and I don't know them all by heart, as part of the 7.8 version that we have today. But for example, there are 8 different XML-based service interfaces, but they can only be used by the broker service, for example. But there's also a PowerShell-based service interface, which can be used by all of the 11 services. And then you have a couple of in between, but not all service interfaces can be used by each service. So that's important to know. Now, next to the fact that each service needs to register itself with an FMA service group, they also need to register themselves with the configuration service. And upon successful registration, the configuration service will have a listing or will have all the information of all the services on its delivery controller. And it will know about all the service interfaces, it will know about all the main responsibilities, functionalities, and so on. And all of this information will also be stored or is stored within the central-side database. So that also means that each delivery controller and all of the services on the delivery controllers will have access to that same information at any time, which is important, and I'll show you why. And we'll get back to the configuration service in just a slide time. So if you look at the service group again, then again you can have, for example, four delivery controllers, which means four broker services, and they will all register themselves in the same service group. Now, simply put, if one of the broker services will go down because a delivery controller goes down or is shut down, for example, then all of the other services know exactly about its responsibilities, where it lived, and so on and so forth, because of the information stored in the central site database. And one of the other services will be able to take over its tasks and responsibilities. So this is one of the ways that the FMA makes its services highly available. Now, the configuration service, I already mentioned that all of the services also need to register themselves with the configuration service. And on doing so, they will also share the security identifier, the SID, of the machine that they are running on. And this information will also be stored in the central site database. Now, why is this important? Because the configuration service is really a major part of the FMA. It's really important because it enables the different services to be able to communicate with each other. So let's say, for example, that you would use the broker service to power manage a couple of VMs. And for that, it would need to talk to the host service. But by default, the broker service does not know where the host service resides or what type of service interface it should use or could use to communicate with the host service. So what it will first need to do, it will first need to communicate with the configuration service, which will send down the listing of registered services, including their capabilities, responsibilities, but also their service interfaces. And then that information will be cached by the broker service for 5 minutes, which is configurable as well. And now the broker service has all this information, so now it knows where the host service is, and it also knows which communication interfaces, service interfaces, it can use to communicate with the host service, so it will do so, and now it can power manage the virtual machines on the underlying hypervisor through the host service, because the host service is mainly responsible for the communication between your delivery controllers or the FMA and its host connection being the hypervisor. Now, the same applies, for example, to the machine creation services. So let's say you want to create 5 or 10 virtual machines. You would need the AD identity service for that as well, because that takes care of giving the machines their own identity within AD, for example. So again, it will communicate with the configuration service that will send down the information, the listing of all the registered services. The information will be cached for 5 minutes, and now it will be able to communicate with the AD identity service, and the machines will be created, provisioned, and they will have their own identity within AD. So hopefully this sort of explains why the configuration service is such an essential part of the FMA. Now, the broker service also has a lot of responsibilities, as you probably know. It takes care of all the communication between the delivery controllers and the VDAs, for example. It registers machines, which is a very important process as well. It takes care of power management indirectly through the host service, and there's a whole list, about 20 things it needs to do, it needs to take care of, that it's responsible for. But what a lot of people do not know are the broker service internals, so to speak. This is something I came up with myself, but it's about the site services. And site services live within your broker services. And there are 18 in total, and they take care of site-wide maintenance, housekeeping, and those are things like power management schedules, idle times, disconnect sessions, things like that. And a couple of more as well, of course. Now, it's not that all of the 18 services, or that each broker service will give or has room for all of the 18 site services. The 18 site services will be distributed amongst the available broker services within your site. So that means that if you have 4 broker services, because you have 4 delivery controllers, then those 18 site services will be spread amongst those broker services. This happens at runtime, so when a delivery controller is added to a site, for example, more spreading will take place, so to speak. And unfortunately, I've tried to come up with this information, but I don't know which algorithm is used or which method is used to accomplish this. I know it has something to do with information stored within the database, but not entirely sure on how this works. Now, you also need to know, and it doesn't only apply to site services, but your delivery controller and the central site database will have a constant communication going on in the form of heartbeat messages. So a heartbeat is sent every 20 seconds with a default time to live of 40 seconds. And that's also the reason why if you look in Studio, for example, and you look under host connections, that the last communication time between your delivery controllers and the database will always be zero. And it always needs to be zero, because if it's not, then something is wrong. So if something happens to one of your delivery controllers, those site services will automatically be transferred to one of the still healthy broker services, I should say, one of your still healthy delivery controllers. Now, with regards to site services, there is one exception which works a bit different, and that is the hypervisor connection site service. And you can use it to determine which of your delivery controllers can take care of certain host connections, for example. And it's different because it is the only service of all the site services, all 18, that can be configured using the PowerShell SDK, for example, because you can tell it which delivery controller to use to manage your host connections. And it's also the only service which can reside on multiple broker services or multiple delivery controllers within your site. So it's an exception to the rule, you could say. And as mentioned, it is used or can be used to specify a preferred controller to take care of your host connections. So again, if you have multiple delivery controllers and one might have more compute power than the other, then you might choose to do so. This is also possible for your other site services, but it's an unsupported and so not recommended approach. And now I see that I still have a lot of time left, and this is basically what I had to share with you guys today. I had a short section on the book I'm working on and what I will talk about within the book, but I'll skip that for now. So I'm up to questions already. Any questions? Yeah.
If there is a possibility to monitor all these services, mm-hmm. PowerShell, or is it included in the directory?
Yeah, multiple are monitored by default within Studio on your main dashboard, for example. So that's the green check marks or red crosses, of course. And you have separate PowerShell commandlets, so to speak, to monitor each service individually. Yeah. And I don't, it's something like get, for example, broker service status. So that will pop up the broker service. And then you can see if it's running, if it's healthy, and if something is wrong, then it will exactly tell you what is wrong, and if you're lucky, what to do about it. So it's always best to check your FMA services or to check the FMA services using PowerShell instead of, for example, the Windows service MMC. So, yeah, because that really doesn't tell you anything anymore.
Because they're known for not being really strong in documenting their PowerShell.
Yeah, well, I had a look. Oh, yes. So the question was, how is the documentation on the Citrix side with regards to PowerShell? Well, I haven't used it that much, but I needed to dig in because of a presentation I did with Mick Glover, someone who works at Citrix, with regards to power management. And it's, well, you need to know what you're looking for, but it's getting better. It's not, it's okay. Let's just leave it at that, yeah. You need to know what you're looking for. You need to know, the direction, you're looking for, yeah. So. Any more? Well, then, thank you for today.